It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective as we always have fun talking football. We've got a great night, Bubba, looking ahead, and I know we've got two great guests, right?
Yeah, as you see there on the bottom of the screen, during our first half hour, we're going to be joined by Marcellus Harris, East Carolina wide receiver from 1996 to 2000. And then during our second half hour, catching up with another East Carolina alum, Antoine Staley, who writes for Athlon Sports and does an excellent job for them.
Welcome in, Marcellus Harris. Marcellus, man, so great to have you on. And we always love to talk Pirate football, talk about ECU, and very excited to have you on. Anytime we can have a former player on, it's a great night for us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on with you guys, man, and just kind of nostalgic feeling just going back and thinking about some of my memories as a Pirate football, as a part of the Pirate football family, and just reminiscing over the good days that we had.
No doubt about it. I told Bubba and Kyle that I know I was telling you right before we went on, like pre-interview, if you will, the very fact that I feel like an old man. You know, it's like that we have a lot of great memories, but I want to create new memories. I don't want to be. I was a student back then, and then covering the Pirates right after I graduated, starting in '96. So your era, I was like covering the Pirates a few of those years. And I don't want to be where it's just about us, like for the 90s or whatever decade. I wanted to be where we, you know, at some point, when are we going to pass the torch? Like, we had those teams, I know, I know Skip Holtz and obviously with Ruffin McNeil, but five losing seasons is not something that I'm very happy about. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's been tough watching from afar the last few years. It's been a little difficult to get down because I was coaching high school football the past 11 years, break this past year, and had a chance to come down to a game. And like I said, I came down to the Tulsa game and just to experience the new atmosphere, the new environment. And one of the things me and a lot of our guys always talk about is getting back to those winning ways. I mean, back when we played, it wasn't a thing for us to take that underdog status and wear it with a chip on our shoulder, and through the work we did in the summertime with Coach Connors, who molded so many of us, and taking that family vibe out there on the football field, and with Coach Logan and some of the great coaches that we had, it was kind of a standard that we set that we want to see the Pirates of now get back to that standard and make people proud to be a Pirate. Because back in those days, man, it was on fire. It was those Saturdays, man. It was a great time to be a Pirate. As we talked earlier, going after the game, it was just Pirate football all over the place. And definitely want to get back to that level, get back to that feel, and get back to that love of being a part of Pirate football.
Well, Marcellus, take us back to the mid-90s when you were coming out of the 757 and talk about your recruitment. You referenced Coach Logan, and obviously Coach Logan, he was doing things offensively that a lot of people around the nation weren't doing. He was a Bill Walsh fan, of course, run and shoot offense, and a lot of times you would hear folks, commentators and whatnot, say the Pitt County offense or maybe the East Coast offense, talking about Coach Logan's scheme. So just talk about your recruitment and all the schools you were recruited by and how you wound up at East Carolina out of the 757.
Well, it's funny you brought that up because even when I was my ninth and 10th grade year, I played with some pretty good guys that are pretty well-renowned as a receiver. My quarterback was Aaron Brooks, his 11th and 12th grade year. He went on to UVA, played quarterback, got drafted to the league. Then went on to play with New Orleans, won the first playoff game as a starting quarterback for New Orleans years ago. My 11th and 12th grade year, I moved to wide receiver after spending a little bit of time as quarterback my 10th grade year. But I lost my position as 11th grade quarterback to a 9th grader by the name of Michael Vick. He came in and my 11th, 12th grade year, I moved to receiver. Went on and did pretty well. He did pretty well. I mean, everybody knows about his story. And did well enough that North Carolina State brought me up for a visit. Maryland brought me up for a visit. Boston College. And then East Carolina was someplace that my heart was set on after my high school teammate, Linwood DeBrew, who was ahead of me, had already been a part of the team playing wide receiver. And they came down, and that they were heavy into the 757 area, as you mentioned, which is the Newport News, Hampton Roads area, which is a talent-rich area when it comes to athletics. Coach Jagosinski, who was the offensive line coach, was my recruiting coordinator for our area. He came down to Ferguson High School, and man, I fell in love with the guy, man. He was an authentic guy. Came and brought me down for official visit. And once I had a chance to get with my buddy Linwood DeBrew and meet Marcus Crandall, those guys, I was all in. Not to mention that I played wide receiver, as I stated. And it wasn't many schools that I visited threw the ball around like East Carolina did back then. Now, I mean, you turn the TV on, everybody's throwing the ball 40, 50 times a game. But late 90s, Coach Logan was one of those guys. You had your Mike Leeches and some of those other guys that did the air raid. But it wasn't a lot that was in the same mold of Coach Logan and Coach Martin, offensive coordinator. And that just drew me in because I wanted to catch the ball. I wanted to get out there, play receiver, catch the ball, and that's how I ended up being a Pirate. And I look back on it and glad I did make that decision to come to East Carolina.
And Marcellus, the fact that I'm glad you mentioned about the 757, because that is, and you were talking about the athletes, it's incredible the number of athletes that are so close to us. And I firmly believe, and I believe, Bubba, if I'm not mistaken, unless they've changed the assignments as far as recruiting territories, I believe Coach Steve Schenkweiler has that territory. So we know the recruiter that Schenk is. And I believe I'm not mistaken, but the 757, we could make a living at just the players at Eastern North Carolina and the 757 and put on an all-star team for the Pirates, in my opinion.
And Coach Schenk, he was at East Carolina when I was there. Not the whole time. He came in a little later. And I still have a relationship with him. We talk through Twitter every once in a while. We that's how we kind of connect sometimes. But he's back up this area, and he knows the talent that's up here. Also, pretty good friends with Coach Byron Threet. We played actually in an all-star game our senior year coming out of high school together.
Wow.
He went on and did great things as an athlete. Went on to coach JMU, was a head coach at Virginia State for a little while, led them to a good record while he was there. And then now he's down in East Carolina. And actually, he called me late last year near the end of their season and asking me, what's going on in the area, because they know they want to get back up here. And that's going to – and being that – and knowing that they're coming back up in this area and recruiting as hard as they have been, as we talked about earlier, I feel that we can get back to that level in which we could put that talent out there to produce some more W's for us. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. Not just in the 757 area, but the Richmond 804 area. Those guys have been hitting the road hard back in Virginia, which I'm excited about.
And the fact that he had the – Bubba, he had the, of course, all speaking of Coach Houston and Schenk and Donnie, they had the time at James Madison. So know the state of Virginia very well. He had the time at Lenora Ryan. So he has North Carolina very well. Speaking of Coach Houston, you look at the Citadel. I mean, the Palmetto State, we're owning the Palmetto State as far as a lot of those kids that normally would maybe be in a Gamecock or going to Clemson. A lot of those guys are Clemson guys now. And I understand why Dabo's getting really big talent, because Clemson is beyond a brand name. I mean, it's a national power, even more than what we would anticipate. So we win a national championship. So when you look at all the states, and then I know, Bubba, they've had Georgia and Alabama. I mean, it's like, seems like from basically what the maybe DC area down, we've done extremely well, in my opinion. Some of the best recruiting I've seen in a long, long time for the Pirates. And I'm not just saying that because we've had some good recruiting classes, but man, Houston has done the best I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. Coach. Yeah.
And I was just mentioning, when I think about guy used to sit back in the locker room, Scott Harley, got him out of New Jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, just getting back up and down that East Coast and, talking about the love of Pirate football, and that's kind of what I'm glad I'm be able to come and join you guys, because I've been trying to get more engaged with with East Carolina is, like I said, coaching kind of took me away because I'm been in the mindset of trying to get our guys together so much and get them recruited and going on to bigger and better places. But just being able to reconnect with Coach Three, talking to Coach Shank, and doing what I can do on my end because, like I said, I still bleed purple and gold as well.
Marcellus, when you were coming into the program there in the mid-90s, and we were coming off of back-to-back Liberty Bowls, Coach Logan really had it rolling, and you had the opportunity to learn from guys like Larry Shannon, Mick Galloway, Jason Nichols. Talk about having the chance to learn from such tremendous wideouts like those guys.
Man, I was blessed to be around some amazing guys. They weren't just great football players, wide receivers. They were great guys off the field. We had a real family bond in our receiver group. One of the guys that I was closest with was a good friend, Troy Smith. We still talk to this day. And I'll tell any and everybody that I've ever had a conversation with about wide receiver, he's one of the best wide receivers I've ever been around. I mean, his hands, his route running, I learned a great deal from him especially. But those guys, Jason Nichols, Mitch Galloway, I kind of tried – being I was a shorter guy, I mean, I was 5'9", 5'10", in our offense, I played the same position that Mitch Galloway played as an H-back in our offense at the time. And just being able to watch him, he was a senior in my freshman year, and just being able to watch how he did things and how he carried himself about practice and practice habits, and then being able to be around my guy Linwood DeBrew, was able to get into the starting lineup. Because Linwood, who played ahead of me, he tore his ACL in fourth or fifth game into the year. And even though he wasn't able to play, he was always in my ear on the sideline letting me know because as a freshman, my eyes were just as big as day trying to figure out what was going on out there at times. And like your first game was at West Virginia. Go think of that. And all those people and but those guys kept me up. Kept me calm, kept me cool, kept me collected, and I was around a great group. And those they may not have had, you know, the NFL career or success that they may have wanted, but they're going on doing great things now as coaches, as fathers, as family men, mentors, and I'm still leaning on those guys to this day because of that relationship I had in that wide receiver room.
Yeah, Marcellus, I see another guy, I believe, from the 7-5. Wasn't Arnie from
My God, Arnie. Yeah, Arnie, he was a year or two behind me. He was another one that came in. We talk about the 757 area. He played at a school called Deep Creek in Chesapeake. And he was he was one of those guys that everybody was recruiting. 6'5", playing quarterback. They winning championships over there. And got my guy Travis Mazik, another guy from the 757 that was down, that was on the team that came down while I was there, younger than me. But we had some great talent from the 757, so that's why we got to get back to it.
No question, especially when you think about the fact that people talk about all the time that as far as East Carolina, it's the biggest university closest to the 757. So why not? I mean, tap right into it.
Is that people didn't, I mean, you know, growing up in our area, you hear about the UVAs, you hear about the Virginia Techs. Then you hear about the Hampton Universities, Norfolk States that are local in the area. Like I said, I didn't know anything about East Carolina until Linwood DeBrew, who graduated from the school I went to, went there. And come to find out, I can get to East Carolina faster than I can get a lot faster than I can get to Virginia Tech. I can get to East Carolina faster, almost as fast as I can get to UVA. So that's the good thing about those guys hitting the pavement and getting back up here to let people know. East Carolina, you can get a good academics, and you can have a good football career right down the road.
And Marcellus, that's one of the things, kind of what you're saying as far as not having heard really about the Pirates compared to the Cavaliers and Hokies up to about 92 or thereabouts when Virginia Tech went into the Big East. East Carolina and Virginia Tech were, of course, both major 1A independents. And then when the Hokies got that big East invite and we didn't, that certainly provided some separation, even though we obviously had our success as well.
Yeah. I mean, and I know the conferences you got, it's been a complete change from the time I was playing, you know, the Big Fives, and then you got the American Athletic. You got these different conferences now. Then, you know, basketball and football is in consideration, and kind of schools are looking for what the best fit for overall programs. So I know it gets a little that the Big East kind of when it dismantled, because I know at one point I had thought we were looking at joining the Big East, and that would have been a big deal. And funny thing about it, I know I was talking about Vic earlier, and some people know this story, some people may not know this story. His senior year in high school, Vic came down to visit East Carolina. That was one of his visits that he took, and I was his host. We also had David Garrod at the time. It was his freshman year, I believe, when he came down to visit. And, you know, it was a conversation Vic had. I won't tell the coach's name, but they asked Vic about possibly moving to wide receiver. Vic and I had a talk. He was like, "Nah, I don't want to play quarterback." I want to say he probably would have came down because we were kind of tight at the time, you know, him being in high school and I'm playing together. But that conversation kind of took his mind another direction. And so we didn't get to bring Vic in, but I can't say we had David Garrod around. He did his thing while he was here. But yeah, a lot of people may not know that story, that Vic was walking around East Carolina as a recruit, his senior year in high school. And can you imagine, if Vic would have been there bringing that Heisman, hype around in East Carolina, that could have definitely took us to another level, like it took Virginia Tech to another level.
Yeah. Like you're saying, I knew, kind of parts of that story. I knew you guys had played together in high school, and I knew that he had visited, and I'd heard that we had had a shot, but I did not know. Doesn't surprise me, but I had not heard that a coach had suggested moving to receiver. But, another former teammate chiming in here, a guy that's coaching now in the Winston-Salem.
Oh my area. God. Bernard, doing his thing down there in North Carolina.
Yeah, huge fan of you guys are man, awesome. As far as Michael Vick is concerned, do you think would he have come? He would want to play, right? He would want to have started. So if you have David Garrod, so basically you have two amazing quarterbacks at the same time. That would have been really difficult, right?
Yeah, it would have been. It definitely would have been a challenge because, like,
problem
I said,
to have.
He was no. He wasn't. No chopped liver at quarterback.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, he went on to have a pretty successful career in Jacksonville. But yeah, it would have been tough. It would have been tough because I mean, things work out the way they do. I mean, God has his plans. And like Vic went on Virginia Tech, did amazing things. Dave was at with us doing amazing things, and you know, that's how it is. Now, like I said, I always kind of not always, but sometimes I always think back how. What could have been if Vic had on the purple and gold, and we still, you know, enjoying our time from high school to college playing a little football together.
No question about it. We're looking at what do you think now with the program? I know you said you came to the Tulsa game, a tough game for the Pirates, the end of the season last year. What do you think about Coach Houston, the staff? I know you told us about Byron Thweet, and him a lot. The coaching staff is I'll tell you, another rock star staff that, you know, Coach Houston has put together, obviously, and now having a new defensive coordinator yet this year with Blake Carroll. I think that the guys, I think the offense, you're in your neck of the woods with the offense as far as the wide receiver were loaded, running backs were loaded. They're putting back, they're bringing back the emphasis on the tight end position. And Coach Schenck, I think, is going to have obviously the offensive line will, unless there's injuries, I think the offensive line will be improved. So, and we have Holton Ehlers, and I mean, you've got CJ Johnson, a whole bunch of guys on the offensive side of the ball. I think a lot of points are going to be scored this year.
Yeah, I mean, I was also able to go. I know I came down to the Tulsa game, but I also went to when they came up here to play ODU this year. It looked pretty good when I was at the ODU game. You know, ODU had some struggles throughout the course of the year, but I like what I saw with some of the creativity offensively. And but one of the things that did somewhat seem like a little bit of a challenge was the defensive side of the ball. I mean, you're giving up a lot of, but that's going to come. You know, Coach Houston, I feel, is going to bring, he's bringing a attitude change with those guys. in which they looking like they're competing out there. And that's what it's going to be all about. And, you know, like we said, it goes back to recruiting still. I mean, getting those guys in there with that mindset, that attitude, that they're going to outwork everybody. That's how we won games. It wasn't that we were the most talented team. It was because we went out there and outworked everybody. We outworked people throughout the summertime. We outworked people throughout the course of the season with how Coach Connors had us conditioning throughout the course of the season. It was just a mindset we have. And from the what I've heard from Coach Three in my conversations with him and from what I've seen on some of the videos, I feel that we can turn that corner. But it's going to be a process. It's going to be a process. It's not going to be an overnight thing. And I'm, like I said, I'm excited about it. I'm back engaged. I'm back activated with the Power Football family. Looking forward to seeing some good things here in the near future.
Marcel, it's kind of shifting back to your career. 96, you were obviously redshirting when the Pirates had a tremendous year. We went 8-3, but got left out of a bowl. And what a shame that was. And, you know, nowadays you have 40-plus bowls. And back then we were in between where that transitional year, you know, going into Conference USA in 97. So in 97, you referenced that season opener up at West Virginia where we lost a close ball game. With Danny Gonzalez at quarterback, and really went down to the wire that day. But and then we bounced back with a win over Wake Forest, which was a tremendous game where we trailed by three touchdowns. But after that, had our struggles, had a lot of turnover on the offensive line. But after that 1-5 start, we won four straight and had an opportunity to play for a winning season in the season finale against NC State. And if I recall correctly, I want to say that maybe you called a shallow crosser in that game and took it down the sideline to either set up a touchdown or for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I remember that game as well. That was at we played it in Raleigh that game. And it had a guy on the other side catching the ball by the name of Torrey Holt, who was crazy with what he did to us that game. But you know, that environment, the atmosphere, you know, sort of a rival, so to speak. You know, we thought we had a good chance to win that game. But from that 97, we learned a lot from that 97 season going into that next year, which we kind of knuckled down and went, you know, did a little bit better with what we did, offensively, defensively, special team wise. But my redshirt freshman year, like I said, we started off at West Virginia, had some bumps in the road, but we came together. We came together because Danny G, that was his first year starting at quarterback. And he was replacing the guy who was considered a legend in East Carolina football history. And but, you know, going on from that year throughout the next few years, we were able to go to a couple bowl games. Our senior year, we finished up at playing Texas Tech in Houston at the Gallery Furniture Bowl. And it just, you know, I wouldn't trade that time in for nothing that we had and the bonds that we built and how the camaraderie that was established. And like I said, moving forward, I look to the teams now building that same bond and enjoying their time in East Carolina, because it's going to go by fast. I'm looking. You say that like it was yesterday, but I'm looking back, it's over 20 years ago now. That we were able to enjoy those times. And I'm just excited about it moving forward, man. In my career, I did what I set out to do. Caught a few passes. I was able to get a free agent deal with Jacksonville Jaguars upon my career at East Carolina. Didn't work out like I wanted to. Went up to Hamilton Tiger Cats in Canada for a little while. And then after that, I just came back and took a new path. I wanted to get into coaching. I wanted to get into to community activism. And it was a lot of other things that I wanted to follow after my time in East Carolina.
And that's something I certainly wanted to ask you about. But specifically about that 97 season. Obviously, like I said, Scott Harley had such a tremendous 96 year, but we had those losses on the offensive line. But those guys did a tremendous job of pass protecting, even though the run game wasn't where it needed to be. So just give us a glimpse behind the scenes on what it was like as far as Coach Logan and the offensive staff and everything they did to adjust and start throwing the ball more with Danny Gonzalez and the receivers we have.
Yeah, I mean, Harley, that year before, I think he had like close to 2,000 yards. He had a record that year. And it's funny, like I said, his locker was right beside mine, so I got a chance to talk to him quite often. But as the year went on in the 97 year, a lot of people, well, guys that follow East Carolina like yourselves, knew our short passing game was pretty much an extension of our run game. And we had a lot of checks prior to a play being ran where we had a run check, and if quarterback saw a certain look, he would check to the passing game. Well, obviously, after Harley had such a great year that year prior, people were loading the box on us. They were loading the box on us that next year because they said Scott Harley's not going to run for another 300 yards like he did one game that year before. So obviously those checks went in place where we went to a lot of our quick game because how many people were loading up the box, and he didn't get as many carries as many yards, obviously, because defenses were designed to stop him, which was only natural to do after you have a running back that can play like Harley did. And not only did we have Scott Harley, but we had a couple other backs in the stable. Jamie Wilson would just get on the field as well. And he could run that football. He was another guy that kind of split some of that time up as well. His redshirt freshman year, he was a local guy from Conley.
Yeah, Conley, yeah.
So we had some guys that skill-wise, we could put up in the top quarter in the country. And that was because of the scheme of Coach Logan, Coach Martin, the recruits that we were getting from all over the place, like from Virginia to New Jersey, like I said earlier. And just moving forward, it was a little rough to start with because, obviously, like I said, Danny G was just getting into the fold of being a starting quarterback, even though he had some playing time. But the thing about that set Danny apart from a lot of people, he was one of the smartest guys, not just to play quarterback, but one of the smartest guys that understood football. He saw so much, and he would talk so much. And being a redshirt freshman, he would say so much to me prior to the snapping the football. Hey, B2, look out for this. B2, look there. If this guy comes here, I want you to have your eyes open a little bit faster. So he was a guy, man, that didn't get enough credit, even though he went from the guy who was after Crandall and before Gerard playing quarterback. And but that 97 year, it was a big maturation year for us, and that's a strong redshirt class of freshmen that we had that year because we went on after that, and we had a lot of guys that got a lot of time on the football field as redshirt freshmen.
No question about it. Marcellus, as far as your time there at East Carolina, Coach Houston has even on our show has said that he wants former players to come back, and it made me feel good about that. What would you tell the guys today? I know it's a different era, and I understand all that, and things are different, but what would you tell the guys today? Winning is still winning, right? I mean, the fundamentals are still the same, even though the game evolves and, you know, different times. But what would you tell the players of today that they could do to get to the level that we've had? Not that we're going to be going back, because you can't go back, but to get to Pirate football where it needs to be.
Well, obviously, we do got to win. We got to win. You got to be competitive in the games, but we got to win. If I had a chance to get down and talk to the guys, I would let them know that the winning will take care of itself. It's what you put into it throughout the time when nobody's watching. Because, like I said earlier, the reason why we were able to win games while we were there is because of what we put in those winter conditioning days, first thing in the mornings, being out there on the football field 6 o'clock when it's like 20 degrees outside and getting workouts in, being out there in the summertime. We didn't go home over the summer. I mean, I know with everything going on today is a lot different, but we were at the stadium. We were in Greenville all summer long. Tuesdays was a day that we dreaded, but we went out there anyway. It was our 300 days. We had to run 300 with Coach Connors and in that North Carolina heat in the middle of the summertime, Friday mornings in the summertime, running those 16 to 110 yard sprints. I mean, these are things that we look back on it now that we hated to do because of the pain that it brought, but we knew it was making us better, and it built us up to go out there and want to fight for one another. And if there's anything I could say to those guys, man, that the work that you guys that they're putting in now is going to be a reflection of what happens out there on the field on Saturday afternoon. So and just keep going hard. I mean, like I said, winning to take care of yourself, but you got to put in the time, you got to put in the energy, you got to put in the effort, and do it collectively. And that's what I take from my experience, because you'll hear me say this word quite often. We were family. I consider ourselves a family, and because that's what we were put through, and you know, and it paid off. It paid off. We didn't get that Conference USA championship year after year like I would have wanted to get, but we put us in a position at least to compete for it. And like I said, those guys can get that to that level. And they have the coaching staff that I feel can get them to that level.
Question for you. See a couple of teammates that come on with Arnie and Bernard. As far as the nickname B2, where does that come? Where's the nickname B2 come from?
Well, I'm Marcellus Harris III. And my dad, obviously, he's Marcellus Harris Jr. But his nickname was Butch, or is Butch. My parents wanted to be a little different, and I was born the year Star Wars came out. So instead of being Butch Jr. and, you know, the traditional BJ, they said Butch the second. So B and two, that's where that came from.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That's really cool. B2, that's really cool. Yeah. And the one thing that I know people think about you guys of certainly that 99 season, starting out 5-0, one of the biggest games, and I think the history of Pirate football was the 99. I call it the Floyd Bowl, where we go to Carter Finley, and we beat the Miami Hurricanes. I mean,
in Columbia for a week in South Carolina.
Yeah, well, guys that have lost everything, they didn't know they lost everything. Mm-hmm. You guys, I know, had no clothes because you're thinking that you're going to be down there in Columbia, the University of South Carolina. And come right back, and then we've had some guys on have talked about that. But from your perspective, what was things like there as far as Hurricane Floyd and having to stay in Columbia, Coach Holtz letting you guys stay down there, and then coming instead of Greenville, you play in Raleigh at Carter Finley Stadium. Who would have ever thought we'd have a home game at Carter Finley Stadium?
And then have our fans rush the field in somebody else's stadium. But yeah, that experience is something that I'll never forget. Cause like you said, we went down to South Carolina. We packed our weekend clothes to go down and come back up and, come to find out we're going to be there the whole week. Most of us only had, if lucky, two pair of underwear at the time. But staying out there and not knowing how things were. I mean, we were hearing the news reports, how bad it was. Actually, when we got back, my roommate and I, we had to move from our apartment. My roommate, Derek Gamble, played offensive line. We had to move out of our apartment. We were on the second level. We didn't lose our stuff, but some of the bottom apartments were damaged pretty bad. But just being out there and for that week, and like I said, it was another bonding session pretty much for us. And we had nothing else to do but be with each other. So we were around each other. You know, we were always trying to find ways to make you know, have a good time while we were in the company of each other. You know, we did our practices. We got back because we were still preparing for a team that had like 20 number one draft picks on the team for the Miami Hurricanes. So you know, the odds were definitely stacked against us talent wise. But I feel everything we went through that week prepared us to go out there and compete and win that football game that weekend. So it's moments like that you turn, you know, tragedy into opportunities to get better and be better. I often use that when I'm able to speak in different events, how that one moment in time brought a family of guys even closer to go out there and do something what many people didn't expect could happen. And that was beating a team with Hall of Fame wide receivers, Hall of Fame running backs, Hall of Fame linebackers, and defensive backs. And because of that the focus that we had, and just the fight that we showed, and you know, it's something special about being a Pirate. It's something special about being a Pirate. I didn't realize it all the way then, how I do now. As you go back and reflect on a lot of the things you went through, and know it was because of those trying times that you were able to come out stronger, and that's a prime example of it. And I take that with me to my grave, that experience and how it built the character of our football team.
So Marcellus, I just had a question, kind of a two-part question, just as far as some of your favorite memories. And you had the chance to play in venues like South Carolina and different stadiums, the Legion Field against Alabama, where we nearly pulled off that upset in 98, unfortunately.
That game still hurts, man. That game still hurts.
Had a missed PAT that was blocked and run back, and maybe another missed PAT. But in addition to that, besides maybe some of the venues that you played in, also like some top individual memories as far as maybe that Syracuse game in 2000. Also, I know in the bowl game against Texas Tech out of the Astrodome, you made a tremendous catch on a deep ball from David Garrard. And that's something that after you answer this, I wanted to ask you about that deep ball that David Garrard throws, just generally speaking.
When you think about it, it's a lot of memories. I would even go on to say a lot of my best memories were some of the things that happened off the football field, just being around the brothers, the football family, moments in the cafeteria, in the locker room. It was that camaraderie that we had that, you know, as an adult, mature adult now, you don't have those same type of interactions with your guys like you did that you were fighting with on the daily to get better. But on the field, and you mentioned the Alabama, when I was able to score a touchdown against Alabama, and I work with a lot of young people now, I work with guys that are athletes now, and they only see the Alabama of today. They don't know the Alabama of when we played, which was a little bit different Alabama, but they see Alabama, this powerhouse, this program that has all these guys that go on to the NFL, do great things. So I have this picture when I scored a touchdown against Alabama, and I show it to the guys, and they be like, "Man, you scored against Alabama? Yeah, you must have been nice when you played because Alabama, that was they tough." I say, "Yeah, they were good. Yeah, they still good. Yeah, that's it." So they don't know Nick Saban wasn't the coach at the time, so that's something that I'll cherish and use that as give me a little cool points against my young boys as I scored a touchdown against Alabama. You mentioned the Syracuse game, that was I have a lot of great memories of that game because it was pouring down, raining pretty much all game. I had a couple deep passes that I caught for touchdowns for Dave. I remember going up to Army, playing up in Army one year. Dave threw me a ball down the middle, and I won't lie, I put my one hand up because it was a safety coming in to close down on me. And I closed my eyes, and the ball just stuck in my hand. I won't forget that.
Oh, my God.
I got hit pretty hard and I ended up catching it, but I won't ever tell anybody. You guys are the first to know that I closed my eyes and just stuck my hand up and ended up catching the football because I knew I was about to take a shot. But yeah, just those memories, man. Going down to West Virginia, I want to say my senior year, and we did pretty good against them that year. And that's knowing when you go to West Virginia, you got to prepare for everything that comes along with it. Before getting on the football field, because you get to hear some things and see some things that that make you wonder about some people sometimes. But those are some of the memories I'm going to always take with me. I said the fondest memories I have just being with my brothers, my wide receiver guys in the locker room. You see Arnie's up here, my guys Keith Stokes. Travis Mazik played with us, wide receiver, before they moved him over to safety. I just remember when their time came, I was kind of the senior statesman in the room at the time, and I took that role on like I followed Jay Nick, Larry Shannon, and Troy Smith. Well, those are some good memories, but Then you asked about, you talked about David. There's not many guys that could throw a deep ball like Dave threw it. He had a tremendous arm. He would just put the ball out there, let us go run underneath it. And he had trust in us, faith in us to come down with it. And that's a big thing for a quarterback to have, their confidence in your wide receivers. And we talked about Vic earlier. Vic threw an amazing deep ball, but Dave, he was pretty top notch himself.
Yeah, David Garrard and Jeff Blake, who obviously played for East Carolina in the late 80s and early 90s. That's where they threw two of the prettier deep balls that I've ever seen.
And not only did they throw good deep balls, but they had they had a cannon for an arm as well. I talked about the guys I've been fortunate enough to play quarterback as I play wide receiver. Fingers are all crooked now from trying to catch those guys' passes throughout the course of these years, because those guys, they had a cannon on them. Aaron Brooks, Michael Vick, Dave Garrard. I like to say I help those guys get moved forward by catching those balls. They wouldn't be there where they are today if it wasn't for me playing wide receiver. That's my claim to fame.
I remember Coach Logan and Coach Doug Martin just talking about David throwing the deep ball, like dropping it down a chimney, I was a former quarterback myself. And I remember that's one of the things that my dad and other coaches that I had just really emphasized to me, as far as giving yourself some margin for error and allowing your receivers to adjust.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's a talent that not everybody's blessed with. I mean, the throw the ball the way he throws the ball, to have that zip on it, then to have that accuracy down the football field, and having the right angles and everything needed to go into being able to throw the football the way he did. And like you said, the Texas Tech game, it was a prime example. We're playing in the dome, and the ball was so high in the air. I kind of lost vision of it because the way Dave would put the ball up in the air and with the lights and everything. He had a way of having that ball find your hands down the football field. And, he was great at what he did.
Marcellus, I had a question as far as his deep ball or the arm that he had. I've heard a lot of people talk about in the past about as far as the velocity on the ball and when you caught the ball, how it stung. Is that accurate as far as David is concerned, that he threw it so hard that when it would sting your hands?
Yeah, absolutely. I got crooked fingers. I don't know if you can see how crooked this pinky is. It's crooked fingers. Coach Martin, our wide receiver coach, offensive coordinator, he would have us get on the jugs, and he would turn, like, almost after at least twice a week. He would have us get out there, and he would turn the jugs machine up almost to the max and have us catching the balls and getting used to, how Dave threw the football. Sometimes we would have to get in, and some of the receivers would tell you. I see Arnie's up here. He could even tell you. We used to have to get on David because we're running shallow cross, we're running slant, and he's throwing it like we're 15, 20 yards down the field sometimes. man, calm down. When it's, the weather gets cold and, your hand's still not warmed up all the way, throwing the ball like it's summertime. So, he definitely had a cannon for an arm. That's why he was able to go on to the NFL and put in the years that he did. You have to have an arm to be able to do what he did in the NFL. Because the windows are a lot tighter, and he definitely displayed that while he was at East Carolina. Displayed that with Jacksonville, and even some of the guys would tell you also to prepare for David. Coach Martin would have us in the summertime go out on the tennis court, and he would shoot tennis balls to us, and we had to catch tennis balls with the speed all the way up. So. It was definitely an experience playing with a guy who could throw the ball as hard as he did.
No question. As far as when you look at the teams of the past with the Pirates, and we were talking about the job of the recruiting goes, are there any kind of intangibles? I know that one thing that I love about the Big Three as far as football, basketball, baseball, when you have Coach Houston, you have Coach Dooley, Coach Godwin, one of the things I love, I was thinking about this morning, I knew you were going to be on the show tonight, is the mental toughness, the physicality. Is that something you're seeing back already with the guys? I know you have a friend being Coach Byron Thweet, and Coach Shank and all, and you were there with him. But is that something you're seeing now, the physicality being brought back to Pirate football?
Yeah, and I, like I said, I'm watching from afar. A lot of things I've been able to watch is some of the social media videos of practices and being able to witness how they are trying to instill that mentality of the guys. And it looks like from what I see, like I said, from afar, is that they're gradually getting there, and they know what it takes. They build up a successful program at JMU. They have the background and like, you know, they've done this before, so they know what it takes to instill that mindset of mental toughness into the group. I was looking forward to coming down to the spring activities. Unfortunately, we weren't able to conduct those like we normally do, as I was talking to Coach Thweet about it. Like I said, from afar, I feel that they are instilling that attitude that was instilled back when we had to go through all those grueling workouts and practices that were preparing us for game day.
Well, Marcellus, I did say, until I hear anything differently, circle on your calendar August 29th. We got that big game, Marshall.
Yeah,
who knows how many fans we can have. But that's going to be a huge game, a week zero. Until I hear differently, August 29th, I'm the kind of guy that's the way you have to prepare, August 29th. And so we're looking forward to, I'd love to meet you in person. Thank you so much for, you spent a long time with us. It means a lot. And thank you for all that you did for Pirate football and the purple and gold. And we look forward to having you back on, certainly in football season.
Oh, definitely, man. Like I said, I'm looking forward to being reactivated with my Pirate football family. And I appreciate what you guys are doing to keep the history alive and keeping the guys together. It means a lot coming from a guy that blood, sweat, and tears on that football field. So thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
Most definitely. Absolutely.
Keep doing big things up there in the 757 in your community.
Yeah, trying to get some guys down there to you guys. Get on that
please
football
do. Field. That pipeline.
Definitely.
All right. Take care. Have a good one, man. Appreciate you. All right. Bye-bye. In fact, we need to say Interstate 87, I think is what it's going to be, is where they're going to have basically from Norfolk area, and it comes all the way down to our neck of the woods, Interstate 87. It's like Raleigh to Norfolk, but, you know, it's pretty close to us here. We have a guy now who, Bubba, that's been on the show, one of our favorite guests and certainly alum of East Carolina University and a Pirate with us right now, right?
Yeah, we're going from one Pirate to another. And this guy, like you said, is an East Carolina alum and does a tremendous job writing for Athlon Sports, among other publications. Welcome back into the show, Antoine Staley.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good. We're glad to have you back on. Certainly a lot of question marks, certainly with football, sports in general. It's been crazy. And I wanted to ask you right out of the gate, how are you doing personally? And then also, how difficult — you're an outstanding writer, your work speaks for yourself — but how difficult has it been to, people ask us all the time about our show, and we do this podcast, obviously, but how has it been difficult for you with not having sports right now to write about?
Well, I'm doing fine. Just navigating, taking it day by day, I guess, like everybody else, trying to figure out what's all going on. I guess the big thing is with no live sports right now. Typically, I cover the NFL, so right. It was not going to be any live sports right now. Anyway, the only thing that would probably be going on was OTAs and mini camps wrapping up right about now. But we've had access to the coaches, the Carolina Panthers coaches, Joe Brady, Phil Snow, the defensive coordinator, and also Matt Rule, who we talked to today. So we've had some interaction with them, but obviously it's not the same as normally being in the locker room, talking to the players, and just building those relationships that way. So we're just handling it the best way we can right about now. Getting the coverage and trying to figure out stories to write virtually.
Even though we haven't had any live sports to really talk about, there's certainly no shortage of topics to talk about. And you reference all the changes with the Panthers, a new head coach, Matt Rule, new offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, who obviously did such a tremendous job with LSU last year in that national title run. So just let's start with Matt Rhule. I think this is the first time we've had you on the show since he was hired. So yeah. What are your general thoughts on Matt Rhule, and what did you think of the hire?
Well, I can see why David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, really likes him. He's somebody that is – you just listen to him speak, and you kind of want to run through a wall for him. He's definitely really gets people motivated. He's definitely somebody that's not your traditional head coach, old school head coach. He's a new way of thinking, and he's won everywhere he's won. He's taken over some really bad situations. If you go back to when he took over at Temple, they were 2-10 his first year, and ended up when he left it in a much, much better place. Ended up winning two straight 10-win seasons, and then goes to Baylor, and we know about that situation with the sexual assaults and everything like that. And he goes there, and they start out 1-11 his first year, and understandably so, considering all that happened. And then he ended up leaving Baylor in such a great situation, 10 wins, playing for the Big 12 championship, and playing in the Sugar Bowl. So it's definitely he's definitely going to have his work cut out for him. Panthers had a ton of turnover this upcoming year, but they're definitely excited. They believe their team is going to be a lot better than what people think. And I do too. I'm not saying they're going to win 9 or 10 games this year, but I definitely can see them winning anywhere from 6 or 7 games in 2020.
And you know something, Antoine, another thing is that we all know the Pirates were very close to going to a bowl game last year. Instead,
yeah,
they have, you know, a couple games where it didn't go their way. Instead of being 6-6, like we'd hoped for, they were 4-8. So, you know, it could be the reverse for the Panthers, where we think maybe there's, 6 or 7 games, they might win one or two more than what we even think, you know?
Yeah, and I think just like with East Carolina, the defense, just East Carolina, it's going to be the same with the Panthers. I think both teams have questions defensively. You look at Carolina, they lost a lot on that side of the ball. Obviously, Luke Kuechly there, Mario Addison ended up leaving.
Thomas Davis.
Thomas Davis ended up leaving the year before, but yeah, he's definitely not there as well. James Bradbury's gone, Eric Reed. So yeah, it's definitely, you have a ton of turnover, when you have nearly 9 new players on one side of the ball. That's a lot for any team to kind of endure. So yeah, it's definitely going to be some transition there. I expect their offense to be really good. It's just stopping people. And as you kind of alluded to with East Carolina, they had a chance to get to a bowl game. It's going to come down to their defense too. So both teams really, if they can even be average defenses, I think they'll be better than what people expect.
Antoine, I was going to ask you, as far as one of the things that concerns me, and not to bring up a negative topic, but as far as the stadium is concerned with Bank of America Stadium, I know that there are a lot of people that don't understand the way that sports works as far as pro sports. One of the things I'm worried about is seeing when that practice facility in Rock Hill, being it's great for Rock Hill, and I love the folks in the upstate and the Palmetto State, but as far as my friends in Charlotte and Bubba's in that area, I worry about the stadium as far as the Panthers having a new stadium in South Carolina and not in North Carolina and Charlotte.
Well, David Tepper said he wants to have plans to build a stadium in Charlotte. They just want to have the practice facility in South Carolina, which, you know, Rock Hill is not terribly far from Charlotte, as you know. I'm in the area as well. So it's just kind of making sure you have connections in both states. And obviously the Panthers had training camp, and they still had training camp down in Wartford. At least their plans are to have it for one more year. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but that's kind of what they've said. They kind of lean towards they want to do in 2021, at least kind of to wrap it up there before their facility is ready. But yeah, they just kind of want to have ties in both states. And you can kind of understand that, because they are called the Carolina Panthers. It's not North Carolina, North Carolina Panthers. It's the Carolina Panthers. Right. So you kind of want to have those ties in both areas. But yeah, as far as this new stadium, the plans are to keep it in the Charlotte area. And I think that's probably the best thing to do.
Having said that, have you heard some potential areas that I haven't read anything, but have you heard any areas that it possibly could go? Would it stay downtown near where Bank of America is, or would it be more of a suburbs?
I was just going to say, the plans are, it's been some rumors that, they still wanted to be uptown somewhere. It's been some businesses, especially with all this going on, it's been some businesses that have closed down that I'm sure David Tepper is kind of looking at and so looking at potential areas that may be a good place to build a new stadium. So yeah, you've heard some things, nothing definite, but all indications are they definitely want to keep it and keep the stadium in North Carolina. It's just a matter of where instead of when, and it seems like uptown will probably be the best area to do it.
That would be this makes me happy to hear, because you know rumors are just rumors, and I'm glad that you follow the Panthers. And I'm glad to hear that for Panthers fans, and certainly, and you're right about North Carolina, South Carolina, and Rock Hill put a lot of money up, and that's going to be really cool. I've heard some people, as I told, we had a couple weeks ago, a friend of mine, Meg Mixon, as you know, play-by-play voice. I was talking about, I've heard that the Rock Hill facility is going to rival, it may not be the same, obviously, but to the stuff around like Jerry's World, it's going to be a lot of great shopping, a lot of cool stuff. So kudos to Rock Hill and kudos to David Tepper. I'm a huge fan of him. I think that he's got a visionary and a guy that can bring a MLS team, whether people like soccer or not. He made it happen, and that's good news for those of us that want to see the Panthers stay in the Carolinas, if you will. All those rumors years ago about going to L.A. and crazy stuff there too, but very happy to hear that to have David Tepper.
Yeah, it seems like they're gonna try to build something kind of reminiscent. I don't know if you too familiar with Foxborough and what the Patriots have done. They kind of build. They have a stadium and have a mall and everything, restaurants and everything surrounding the stadium. So it's kind of like, I believe that's kind of what David Tepper wants to do, and kind of build just a whole new experience around that area. And it makes sense, especially considering the area and how nice it is. And it's really attraction. You can bring in people from South Carolina. It's really, and then you can bring in people from North Carolina, just kind of that middle ground there. And I think it's be a perfect area to have that.
Today, you were talking about Antoine, how you were there and others. So what were your topics? I know one of the things that I saw come across my phone from ESPN was how Matt Rhule said that he quite possibly may make the decision to kneel with his players. So in that, as well as other things, what were some of the hot topics?
To speak on that, then, he was asked, Matt Rhule was asked, has he made a decision about dealing with his players during the national anthem? And he said, no, not yet, but it was something that he was considering doing, that he was definitely, because he's been really active talking to his players during all these protests that have gone on in different cities, especially in the Charlotte area. Players, some of the Panthers players have been in demonstrated in some of those protests, and Matt Rhule has been supportive of that. He's been supportive of unlike the previous regime, not necessarily Ron Rivera, but Jerry Richardson was definitely not supportive, or at least that's what a lot of players have said, that he wasn't as supportive of the Panthers kneeling for the national anthem. I know Trey Boston spoke in lengths about that. And this whole restraint, even David Tepper, Matt Rhule, they're definitely both supportive of what players want to do as far as kneeling for the national anthem. And some of the other stories that come from it as well, just talking about when training camp specifically may start. It seems like it's going to be July 28th is when they're going to have veterans come in, and rookies are going to come in on the 21st. And also, the bit major thing is, especially with the whole COVID-19 pandemic going on, the Panthers may decide to have their locker rooms and some of their meeting rooms, and just to kind of separate the players there, and just have their meetings upstairs. And they have that ability to do so, especially with they're going to be practicing and having training camp in Charlotte as opposed to having it in Spartanburg, what they normally do. So those are probably the major tidbits and items that came from today's press conference.
And I want to ask you, Antoine, as far as came out today, and as far as East Carolina, I don't know if you heard, I know you've been visiting there covering the Panthers, but we got a press release this afternoon. There's one Pirate that was tested positive for Corona. I don't know if that was actually a player. They didn't specify if it was a player or if it was a member of the administration or a coach or whatever. But as far as the Panthers, have you heard any testing positive, or do you know what the philosophy, I guess the question I'm trying to ask you is, there's two schools of thought. One is obviously you have your as protective as you can of the players, And then there's some that are saying, well, they're young guys, let them go ahead and build immunity now, and get it over with now and not have it when it's like October, November, when who knows, they may be able to have a division run there, a chase for to win the, you know, the division. Who knows what could happen, or a wild card team. I think that's a long shot, but you never know what, like we were talking about earlier, and how terrible would that be to have some Panthers to not be able to play because of COVID-19?
Well, Matt Rule was definitely asked about that. Somebody had asked him, has any of the Panthers contracted the coronavirus? And his response, he didn't want to comment on that. So my thinking is probably, yeah, it's happened a lot with a few other teams around the NFL. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's not. I don't think it's widespread around the team, because it would have been something that we would have probably heard by now. But it seems like they're taking they want to take the proper precautions to prevent that during the season, and they're going to wait to see what the NFL says as well, especially in regards to preseason, because we don't even know what that's going to look like necessarily. The rumor is the preseason is going to be cut in half. It's going to be two games instead of the typical four. They've already canceled the Hall of Fame game and the festivities there, which we knew that was going to come, especially with everything going on. And the players hadn't necessarily been on they haven't been on the field at all. Really, to be completely honest, normally they have that time where they have mini camps and everything like that, but that's kind of been taken away there as well. So, yeah, I definitely think that it's in their best interest to kind of see what's going on and just make assessments off of that.
One of the big things in the NFC South this year is obviously that move that the Tampa Bay Bucks did, acquiring Tom Brady. What were your thoughts on that move, and how big of an impact do you think he'll make on the Bucks?
It's gonna be interesting. They're talking about the team that was near 500 a season ago, and you're bringing somebody like a Tom Brady, who I definitely think, obviously, is still, even in his advanced age, is a little bit of an upgrade from Jameis Winston there. I think they have a chance to make the playoffs. I still like the Saints to win the division. I still think they're the best team in that division. But the Tampa Bay is going to be interesting, especially with all the additions that they made. So getting Tom Brady there, also fortifying that offensive line. Then you got Gronk coming in. So they're definitely going to be a team that's interesting to watch this upcoming year, and could push for a wild card spot, especially considering there are going to be three wild card spots in each conference now instead of the normal two. So Tampa Bay could definitely claim one of those spots there. But it's going to be a tough division. He's still got to think about Atlanta as well. I think they played well the second half of the season. They played terribly the first half, but they definitely did enough to save Dan Quinn's job, and I think they're going to try to do that this upcoming year as well. So I think I expect them to be in the playoff hunt along with Tampa Bay, and of course New Orleans isn't going anywhere either.
It's going to be a diff I hadn't even thought about. That's amazing with the Falcons. You're right about that. They're going to be in the hunt as well. As far as Tom Brady, hopefully he'll go to the right house, right? He won't do the breaking and entering. That would definitely keep them from the playoffs and have TB12 in jail, right?
Yeah.
that was certainly one of the funnier stories that I was aware of from the off season. And just to hear the guy, I can imagine that guy, and just all of a sudden you turn around and you see Tom Brady in your house.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's like, I haven't been drinking in years. You know, you see a guy like, what in the world? Like, you're seeing things. As far as the NFL is concerned, I know you cover the Panthers. Do you have any early teams for people to watch out for? Maybe, I know we were talking about just now with Tampa Bay potentially with making the playoffs, but is there any other teams that maybe in the NFC or AFC that you think are going to be some surprise teams?
Well, I know a lot of people are on Arizona's bandwagon there, deservedly so. I thought they played well late on in the season last year. And then Kyler Murray started to emerge there, and you get him a weapon like DeAndre Hopkins. So that's definitely going to help it as well. And I like the way Kenyon Drake played in the backfield for Arizona. So I definitely think they're a team to watch out for. And they play in a tough division as well, along with San Francisco. They're not going anywhere to Seattle. Obviously, I don't think they're going to go anywhere. And then the Rams are definitely intriguing there. And they missed the playoffs last year with a 9-7 record, but they went to the Super Bowl the year before. So I think the Cardinals in the NFC and in the AFC, I would definitely pick the Colts. I know Phillip Rivers is getting up there in age, but you got a quarterback there. I still think he's one season removed from having an MVP type year. And you get them a team with a better offensive line, better parts around them. I definitely think the Colts could make a run and winning that division in the NFC South, AFC South, especially with you take away a weapon like that from Houston and DeAndre Hopkins. So I definitely think the Colts are a team that's probably a team that can make some noise in the AFC if you're looking for a team outside of the Ravens and the Chiefs.
Hey, Antoine, kind of shifting gears to the college football scene. Like we mentioned in the open, you're an East Carolina alum. And with that being the case, the Pirates in year two of the Mike Houston era, last year 4-8, really didn't have a win to speak of that came against someone that we turned some heads. We nearly had a couple of them in Cincinnati and SMU. But nonetheless, I think we certainly progressed and Houston and staff took over a completed roster in a lot of respects. And they've, by all indications, had a tremendous recruiting class. And then this summer, they're bringing in six transfers, five of those graduate transfers. And then another guy from UNC and Avery Jones, who was originally out of Havelock, who's going to be immediately eligible, appears to provide some help on the offensive line. So what are your thoughts about the Pirates entering year two of Mike Houston?
I'm very intrigued. I referenced the SMU game I was doing on radio the other day, and I thought that was kind of really when things started to turn around for them. I know they lost the game, and they put up a ton of points, but I think that I started to show signs that, yeah, this team is definitely improving and on the rise. And I'm not worried about the offense. I think Houghton Air is doing it. It's the guy at the quarterback position. It's just a matter of just stopping people. If you can do that, especially in a tough conference like the AAC, I definitely think they have an opportunity to win six games. I think this is still a bowl team. I don't know. I mean, I don't know where exactly those six wins may come from, but they may have to pull up some upsets. I'm sure they will, but this is a team that I saw improving. It may not necessarily show in the wins and losses. They improved one by one win, but at the same time, I definitely saw signs that this team is on the rise. And I'm a big Mike Houston fan. I believe everything he's doing there is it's going to take a little time, especially considering the turnover there as far as the head coach and then the roster. But I definitely think this team could potentially get – I don't see a reason why they can't get the six wins this upcoming year. It's just going to be tough because it's such a – tough conference, really a power six conference to be. I mean, power six in as far as NCAA, because I think the AAC is as good as any conference in college football.
No doubt about it. And, you know, Antoine, with you talking about Mike Houston, when you look at he bringing in, making the change as far as when it comes to defense with defensive coordinator with Blake Harrell, I think this is the way I feel. I think that you're right. I think the offensive side of the ball, the guy, they're going to score a lot of points. The offensive side is definitely more mature, more experienced on that side of the ball, a lot of talent. And if Blake Harrell can come in with the great coaches we have on defense, in addition to when we have offense, but I believe that if they improve a little bit, that gives us more of a chance. You know, obviously we're not going to win 10 games or anything crazy like that, but I really believe that we have a shot to, I agree with you. I think we're going to be a bubble team to make a bowl this year. And I never thought I would say that, but I'm really impressed with Blake Harrell. And I think that there's enough talent on that side of the ball with the right scheme, coaching them up. And then I guess the guys have just got to believe and we got to make some big plays, right?
Yeah, I think you just need them to be average. That's pretty much what you need to do, exactly. Especially with that offense. You don't necessarily need to invent the wheel defensively because this offense is going to score a lot of points there. But, yeah, you just need them to be average and make stops when they need them. It could be a bend but don't break defense. If that's going to be good enough, I think, to get into a bowl game. Last year, they just wasn't able to make stops. And, yeah, I just think about the SMU game where it's like it just seems like a video game numbers where it just goes back and forth and back and forth and just debate. It's crazy. But, yeah, if you can you just make some kind of stops there, and even if you can hold teams to 30 points per game, 28, 30 points per game. I think that's enough to at least be able to get to six wins there. And that's the start. And just getting into any kind of bowl game, I think, especially considering the drought that East Carolina's had, I think that would be a step in the right direction.
Man, if Antoine, if we, you know, being a Pirate, if we could get 6-6 to a bowl would be like a miracle season.
Yeah.
I'm not comparing it to the Peach Bowl, but we've been down for so long that a bowl is in this day and age right now is a huge start. And I tell you one thing, the folks, get your season tickets, by the way, 1-800-DAL-EC or ecupirates.com, because next year, and I said this, Antoine, and I've been on record for saying it, year three for Mike Houston is the breakout year. You had last year. One of the greatest things about last year, we had, and as far as being in the top 20, we were the number 19th youngest team in the country. In 2 years, meaning next year, we're going to be one of the oldest teams in the country. And don't tell me that with the talent we have on the offensive side of the ball, there's great guys on defense. Don't tell me that in year three, with the coaching staff we have, the recruiting we have, that we're not going to have a breakout year under Mike Houston. I really believe in the guy. I think that there's a potential there by year four or five. I've said it on record when he was hired. Maybe I'm crazy, but a New Year's Six Bowl, I think, is in our winning conference championship and definitely being in the hunt for it by year four or five. I really believe that. I think that it takes time, but I don't think it's going to take as much time as what people think. I'm not expecting it this year.
I agree. I think you could definitely – I don't think there's any reason why you can't be up there with UCF and Houston and Memphis up there in the conference there. I mean, it's talent too, especially considering the area that East Carolina is in and the recruiting base that they have. So, yeah, it's just going to take some time just to replenish the roster. And, yeah, I agree with you. I'm so excited. I hadn't been to a game there in 5 years, and this year I kind of want to get back there just because I'm excited. I'm intrigued to see what this team looks like there. So I'm ready to go back, and hopefully, depending on what may happen with everything, I'm allowed to do that. If not, then I can always wait until I'm allowed. So we're allowed to be back in the stands. But I'm so excited just to get back there to Greenville, and it seems like a team. This team seems like it's a we have promise finally after a few years, especially after the letting go of Ruff McNeil and Scotty Montgomery and everything like that. I really feel like this team is headed in the right direction, and I'm excited.
I'm going to pay for your gas to come from the Charlotte area to here because it sounds like you were the good luck charm. I mean, if you haven't been to a game in 5 years, we need to get you back to Greenville. If folks are the administration and the ward building are watching right now, we need to get Antoine Staley back. That's been what the problem is for EC football. I finally figured it out. We've been doing this show for over 2 years now and talking to you a few times. Now I finally figured out what's wrong with Pirate football. We have to have Antoine Staley at every single game. Even if he has even if we have a game with you, for the Panthers the next day, we can fly you back there in Charlotte in time or get you there off with a police escort or something, man.
Hey, if they start winning, then I would definitely, I would just be tired the next day, but I can definitely do that then. It'd be worth the trip just to get the excitement back in that town. Cause as you know, when things are going right, it's no better place to be.
No question about it. And I wanted to ask you as far as COVID-19 is concerned, I personally think that what we should do, and I don't know, I'm not I work obviously with it every day, but I'm not a doctor, I'm not clinical staff, but I really believe that if we have to, Kyle doesn't want to wear a mask at 95 degrees, and I get it, man, it's hot. I have to wear a mask every single day, whether I'm out in public or at work. But my thing is, and by the way, folks, don't forget tomorrow in North Carolina, it's mandated, you got to wear a mask. I have people on Facebook. Don't make it political. It's real. They don't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter what political party you're with. COVID is real. So for those people that you're the same people that think that we didn't go to the moon, it was some soundstage in Arizona. It's for real and you need to take it real. And if we want to have college, if you're a college football fan and you don't wear a mask, shame on you or a pro football fan, because we want our football. So wear the mask so we can have football. Anyway, I'll get off on
exactly. And I knew this was coming. So I actually ordered an ECU mask last week. And I've actually been wearing it and gotten rave reviews already from it. So yeah, I knew the mandate was coming. So I was figuring, yeah, I might as well get an ECU mask in the process. I don't blame people for not maybe being out there in the hot sweating with a mask on, but I would definitely, I just want to wear it just so we can get some kind of football, whether I'm watching it on TV or whatever the case may be. So, but yeah, I just hope we can get football, both college and professional, this year.
If Gary Rosenbaum is watching right now, Bubba's dad, let's get some Sports Objective mask. Antoine, you gave me another great idea. We'll get a Sports Objective mask. I have an East Carolina mask, but, you know, and we'll get some Panthers, so we'll get different ones, wear the, you know, different ones every day. But we'll get, see if we can get the Sports Objective mask. That's not a bad idea.
If y'all get that, then, yeah, I'll definitely have one of those.
We'll definitely send you one. I was going to ask you, as far as the Panthers are concerned and the Pirates or college or pro football, would you be opposed to what I'm thinking is where I was going with that? We're just saying, I think we should, with as far as a mask is concerned, the temperature checks, if it takes me an extra, you know, time to get in the stadium and longer, kind of like we did after 9/11 with the TSA, and you have to have longer lines to get through airport. If it takes me longer lines and longer times, I'll be patient. I'll stand there in line because I love my Pirate football, and I hope that more Pirate fans will be like me in that let's just take your time. And I don't know that to be the case. I'm just saying, if they say that it's going to take extra time to get in the stadium, then don't stay at home or just on the tailgate fields. Come in the game, support your Pirates, and just I think we're going to have to, if it's ECU, if it's Carolina Panthers, whomever, we're just going to have to take extra time to get in the stadium.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, whatever precautions to be safe, we need to do. I think that's, we need just to fall in line and do it, because it's all about protecting not only yourself, but everybody else. And unfortunately, it's been a lot of deaths, have been a lot of people affected by this pandemic, and you really don't want to see anybody else really get affected by it. So yeah, I'm down for it as well, whether I'm working in the media or I'm actually going as a fan. I definitely willing to take the extra few minutes, 10, 15 minutes or so, just so everybody can get in and so we can watch football this year.
You alluded to it some. Let's talk some as far as NFL is concerned about rule changes. I know that you were talking about the wild cards. I'm very excited about that. I think that spices up the game. What about the regular season? Is it this year, or when is it coming up?
Next
when
we're year. Adding it'll next year for the it'll next be at game? Least next year. There's been talk that it could be 2 years from now, but it won't start it. It'll probably be next year. But yeah, this year will be 16 games.
I mean, that's crazy, because I'm 47 years old. As long as I can remember, it may have been earlier in my lifetime, but I can remember 16 games for a long, long time. So that's another historic thing. And I know if you're a player, that's kind of tough, because of 18 games is two more games on the on your body. But I've heard some players talk about potentially, why not, what you were talking about earlier with the COVID situation, where there's only two exhibition games. Why not just have two exhibition games and do the 18 regular season games? I would be for that, because, I mean, at the end of the day, we obviously want our Pirates and different college players to make the team and to give them more of a chance to make the team. But how many people really care that much about, you know, two extra games? If you had two games versus four, does it really matter as far as exhibition games are concerned?
Well, to correct you, it's going to be 17 games, which I know is a weird number, but yeah, it's going to be 17 games. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of preseason football, but I do it because I covered the game and everything like that, obviously. So, you know, you sit through it or whatever the case may be, and obviously it serves a purpose because you're trying to see what young players can fill out the roster. So, obviously from that standpoint, you definitely need preseason, but at the same time, yeah, regular season, the games bring in more revenue, and that's kind of what the owners wanted to do. The owners initially wanted 18 games, but the players kind of pushed back on that, so they kind of met with the 17. I don't know exactly how that's going to work with some teams having 8 home games, some teams having 9. I guess you may have 8 one year, you may have 9 the next year. I guess that's kind of what I'm thinking there. But, yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how they – make that happen there, as far as because they can have a perfect system, whereas they have a first place schedule, second place schedule, third and fourth place schedule. I don't know exactly how that's gonna work at all, with the 17th game there. So I guess we'll figure that out once it gets implemented, probably next year, it seems like.
I want to ask you, as far as, I know you don't cover the NBA, but I want to ask you, as far as the NBA and Disney, Wild World of Sports, we have guys that are, the league came out last week, I think it was a 132-page document, all the way down to you and I, if we were NBA players, we can't play doubles for ping pong, for table tennis, you'd have to play singles only. If you and I are teammates in the NBA, we couldn't go to each other's rooms and hang out and party and have a good time. Play some cards. If you play cards, you had to wear a mask. The only time you can't wear a mask, I believe, is if you're like alone in your room and you're watching your iPad. I mean, it was really unbelievable. What is your take? I know there's some players that are not going to, for various reasons, and I can understand all of them, why they're not going to be in Orlando, but what's your take on the NBA and having the games down in like one central location at Disney?
I like it, but yeah, it comes with a lot of questions, especially considering what's all going on in Florida with the pandemic, and their numbers are just constantly rising. They're talking about the epicenter of COVID-19 right now being in Florida, both South Florida and Central Florida, where Orlando is. So yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting, and they're going to try to keep the players in the bubble, but there's only so much you can do. Players are going to go out, and I'm sure it's going to be some knuckleheads to go out and party and have a good time, especially with Florida being so relaxed on some of their rules there. And it's even places that have bars open when they're not supposed to. And I can see a player or two doing that. So you're just going to have to be disciplined. You just have to hope that you have enough discipline and a will to want to win a championship over trying to go out and party and have a good time there. And that's why I kind of glad that they only brought back a certain amount of teams. And me, right, even being a Hornets fan, I know it's disappointing that they're not in it, but at the same time, I don't think they were going to get into the playoffs anyway. So it's probably best that they didn't go anyway. So they just kind of get ready for the next season. And the less amount of players that you have down there, the better, because you don't want to be down there and something just happens and everybody gets infected by the COVID-19. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what may happen with that. I'm definitely excited for the NBA coming back, but at the same time, I also understand why players may not want to play, especially if you're heading into a free agency year with everything going back. And then this new season is supposed to start in December, and it's going to be accelerated, apparently, where they're going to try to end the season like how they normally do in June. So that's really going to be taxing on everybody's body the next couple of seasons.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I'm not picking on LeBron because I actually like LeBron and my son is a huge fan, Alexander is. But back in my day, I sound like 80 years old, they were taking, commercial flights. They were, and not cheap hotels, but cheaper hotels, as far as NBA players were playing more games per week. And, you know, it's like, I'm not knocking LeBron or any of those guys, that they're in a different era and I understand all that, but what's so wrong with playing a few games a week, you know? And then on top of that, my God, the as much as I love to extend it, the NBA finals and the playoffs take for, and the same thing for NHL, they drag those out so long.
They do.
You know, that I understand why they do it for ratings, and they do it because they don't want to compete against each other and they want to give the players a chance to have a little bit of a break. But I don't know about you, but, you know, some of the guys I understand are older and maybe they're worried about getting injuries and getting injured. But for me, I mean, I say, you know, you're playing them. And also another thing that comes to mind is that how many of these guys, one question I just thought about is how many of these guys are going to, like, say, I'm not playing tonight, coach. One of the problems we've had in the NBA, if I take my son to Charlotte to the Hornets, which I'm going to do, and when LeBron comes to town next year, would he rest when I pay a whole bunch of money to see LeBron play?
Yeah, especially when they're going to have the season where it's going to be a lot of back-to-backs next year. Yeah. So, yeah, I imagine there's going to be a lot of players with low management. LeBron will be 36 by that point. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll be playing. I think he'll be trying to manage him and some other veterans as well. It's unfortunate. That's the one thing that I've kind of disliked about the NBA game, even though I understand it, because the playoffs mean so much. You look at Kawhi Leonard and what happened with Toronto last year and willing that team to the championship. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you want to see these players play every single night. And it's unfortunate that you don't, especially when you're paying so much money for a ticket. And yeah, I know I love the Hornets. They have a good young team, a good foundation. I'm really excited about them. But yeah, you want to see other stars playing, when the Golden State Warriors come in town. You want to see Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, or you can see the Clippers with Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. So yeah, Philadelphia with Joel Embiid and obviously LeBron. But yeah, it's definitely unfortunate that when you pay so much money and those players are resting, and it's definitely going to be even worse next year with the accelerated schedule, trying to get everything in.
Yeah, a lot of us, I have to admit that one of the things, the ideas they talk about as far as college basketball is really starting to see, you know, they're saying a lot of it doesn't really matter. Speaking of the NFL, after once you have the Super Bowl over with, then people in February start paying closer attention to conference play and, of course, March Madness when we have a tournament. But they talk about the NBA. To me, the NBA season really starts for me Christmas Day. I love that Christmas Day afternoon game. And I think that was one of the target dates they were talking about for next season.
Yeah.
It's somewhere around Christmas. And I was like, man, that's been the idea a lot of us have wanted for a long time, is have this big marquee game, kicks off your season, and boom, you've got the rest of the season. What a great way to start your year.
Yeah, I thought they would keep it like that. I thought this would be a good opportunity just to say, okay, let's just start doing it like that from here on out and just end the season in August. I mean, because even then, if you end the season in August, you're not really competing against the NFL. It's just training camp at that point. Gotcha. And then by the time that ends, you get right in the football season from there. So, yeah, I thought it was a perfect opportunity for the NBA to do that. But I guess for whatever reason, either the players didn't want to do it or owners, they decided, well, they're going to try to go back to where they were before, having it in late October and November, the season, once they get past the 2021 season. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's, for me, that's when it really starts there, because October, you're watching, everybody's watching football and college football at that point. Nobody's really caring about the NBA unless it's opening night. And then from there, just like, you know, whatever. And then once football ends, you start to pay a little bit more attention. And then the All-Star break comes and you get more and more excited about the NBA at that point.
I want to ask you, I know we're going around the world as far as sports are concerned, pro sports. What about Major League Baseball? How do you feel about I'm a big baseball fan and obviously disappointed with, I know it's basically better than nothing, but I'm still disappointed with the number of games. I was hoping that we could see more games because I guess it's 60 games. I mean, like we've heard from other players that come on here, former players, you could have a 30 days, you could have a hot month and a team that would never make the playoffs. Maybe that's something that will be exciting for the sport. But then next year, that collective bargaining, man, potentially thinking that the Major League Baseball could have a strike. Hopefully not. I hope that they learn their lesson from the negotiations this year.
I hope so too. I'm a huge baseball fan. That's probably,
oh wow, I didn't know that.
That's cool. Football is probably my favorite sport. So I'm hoping I don't see a strike either. I mean, after 94, when I was a kid, I really didn't want to see another strike ever, to be completely honest. And so, yeah, I hope that we can get back and it can be 162 games once again next year as well. As far as it this year, I hated the 60 games too, but at the same time, I mean, you're kind of up against it at this point where you kind of have to do it like that, especially when you want to try to avoid the second wave potentially of COVID-19. So the way I see it, 60 games is better than no games. It's going to be weird, just kind of how the setup is. But at the same time, I'm just happy that baseball is going to be coming back on my birthday, for that matter. So that'd be a good birthday present to myself. Yeah,
that's really cool, especially the start of the season when normally it's right after the All-Star break, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's surreal, but that's the world we live in with COVID-19. Antoine, man, thank you so much. Before we go, how can people follow your work? And certainly we want to have you back on before football season starts.
You find me at Antoine Staley on Twitter. Also find my work at the Riot Report, covering the Carolina Panthers. And you can also find me at Athlon Sports there, talking college football and NFL.
It's going to be great, man. And thanks for coming on short notice. Appreciate you very much. And always good talking to you. Appreciate the visit. And again, look forward to having you on in a month or two when we have, hopefully we can talk about college sports and college football and pro football.
All right. Y'all take care. Thank you.
Certainly, that's Antoine Staley. Appreciate him very much and coming back on with us. He's been with us since the early days, 2 years ago, I think, summer of 2018. So thanks to him very, very much. Want to remind fans, tomorrow night we have trivia, Friday night trivia. And so Johnny Gardner, I know he's won a lot, but we have more and more people that are watching. I call them trivia warriors, and then obviously playing as well. So appreciate the men and women that watch the trivia and play trivia every Friday night right here on Facebook Live and, of course, live on our YouTube channel. I want to remind you, fans, that we're giving away season tickets. You can simply just go to our Sports Objective Facebook page. Of course, we have a pinned tweet explaining how that you can do that each and every platform we're on as far as social media and wherever you listen to the podcast, screenshot that to us. There's all kinds of things, but we have a pair of season tickets that we're giving away this summer, and we want you to definitely benefit from that. And certainly love to see you there in Dowdy-Ficklin in August, August 29th. Once again, I want to remind you, fans, you know, I'm a big pirate. 1-800-DIAL-ECU, 1-800-DIAL-ECU, business hours Monday through Friday or anytime at ecupirates.com. We've had a blast. Certainly great to catch up with Marcellus Harris, one of the greatest wide receivers, certainly in the 90s and of all time. Great to catch up with these former players. If you have an idea that you have for a guest, then you can email us, and that is thesportsobj@gmail.com. Again, thesportsobj@gmail.com. Well, of course, we had Kyle from LaGrange Barber was on assignment tonight. We missed him. But thank you, Bubba, so much for being with Marcellus and there with Antoine. And we hope that you enjoy the rest of your evening. And don't forget to listen to the show anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts. We're still, even though we're here on Facebook Live and obviously on our YouTube channel, we haven't forgotten our roots. We've got lots of great programming coming up this summer that we'll get to you very soon. We'll talk about that. And, of course, our football, basketball, baseball coverage coming up starting, anytime, but it'll really heat up in August. All right, so again, for Marcellus Harris and Antoine Staley, Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates!
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.